Welcome to the Mantra Podcast. My name is Johanna Hector, and I'm excited to immerse myself with you in the world of the highest words and sounds. Although I've been practicing and facilitating yoga for a long time, I only discovered the power and beauty of mantras a few years ago. With my inspiring guests, I'd like to introduce you to their diverse meanings, effects, and sounds. Enjoy listening and chanting along. Tara Jadel is a world-renowned yoga facilitator, moved by the desire to guide humans to rediscover and express their innate freedom and wholeness. She is the co-creator of Embodied Flow, a yoga school that weaves together somatics, tantra, psychology, and yoga into a continuum of movement and mindfulness to awaken our whole self. In her trainings, immersions, and retreats, Tara guides you way beyond what most people think of as yoga. She offers doorways into the felt sense of our vibrant nature by moving through our obfuscating limitations and reclaiming our ability to be fully embodied. Tara is also my teacher, and I am delighted that she is sharing her experience and knowledge about tantric mantra practice with us today. Welcome, Tara. I'm very honored and glad to have you as my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
I was wondering if you would like to guide us through a short landing practice to become more present in our body minds.
Sure. Let's just start by taking a deep breath in and a deep exhale. And allow yourself, myself, ourselves to arrive. It's feeling the weight of your bones yield or give way to the gravitational pull of the earth. And I have my eyes closed. You could have yours closed or softly open. But allow yourself to paint in the outline of your body, the contours. As I'm sitting in my apartment in Athens, a breeze just entered in, and that let me feel the border or the boundary of me. You might feel the hotness or coolness of the air, landscape of sound as such. And just simply to clarify in your mind's eye the space that is you and the space that surrounds you, envelops you, and creates a continuum of energy awareness that has one locus inside and another continuation of awareness that spills forever and ever, quote unquote, outside. And just for a few moments, we can attune to the river of breath that gifts us life-giving prana as it streams from outside to inside. And our interior reflexive response, which is an exhale that moves from our inside to the outside. So we create a slipstream of intercommunication between the outside and the inside and the inside and the outside. And you might notice how the sense, the feeling sense of space, awareness, presence creates perhaps a slightly heightened frequency when you attune to the presence awareness, which is fundamentally us. So you might just bring your hands along the surface of your body, either in your heart, your belly, your thighs, your face, just to include that awareness in the sensation of touch and that tactile presence awareness that is you. And practice staying with that as you slowly open your eyes. If you're listening to this, you could choose instead to keep your eyes closed. But that you stay with reference to that field of us as we listen together.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I like to ask my guests in the beginning, and I also want to ask you, what moves or inspires you these days?
These days, I think that I am sitting with the felt sense of what I just guided you into and playing in the differing environments that I go to, whether it's cities. I mean, now there's a lot of travel, but continuing with the practice of inviting in the field of awareness, whether it's in an airport or on a boat, swimming in the sea, there's such distinct different qualities of environments, whether it's something urban or something in the forest, in the mountains, and noticing when I might contract or forget the field, and how can I remind myself or include it in the experience, and how does that shift the experience? You know, let's say now it's summer, and so there's a lot of traveling and tourist activity. I'm in, Athens, but in the last few months, I've been between, let's say, Berlin, then back to Athens, Sardinia, and then into some of the islands like Aegina, here in Greece. And there's the flavor distinctions are so, and contrasts are so intense. But it's, in the tantric sense, seeing that many or that diversity in the one is the gig. So, wherever I forget it is an opportunity to readjust, reconnect, restructure.
And I think it's relatively easy to remember this on a mental level, at least for me. What helps you to enter back also into the felt sense then of this when you're, for example, at the airport? Maybe that's the most challenging, but let's say, just in a different new environment.
It's very similar to the practice I just led you through. It's mentally, something mental is just the beginning stage, right? It's the catch of the idea, but it doesn't really exist until it is sensorially true. So whether I ground through my feet or the back of my body, or I use an organ or a gland, so much of embodied flow practice is stacking up portals to the field. And so anything could be a doorway that is our body, but the until the felt sense of the continuity is there, it's not really there.
Yeah.
So it's using the body practice, the embodiment practices to get there. I mean, sometimes I will use mantra, sometimes breath, but more often I'm trying to stack up what feels like the most immediate, the most direct way to remember.
Yeah. And I'm excited that today we will also look at how mantra can be one of these doorways. Yeah, the mantra that, or the practice, let's say, that you're bringing to us today is a little bit different than, let's say, most of the episodes. Yeah, would you tell us a little bit of what is the mantra that you are sharing with us today? How did it come to you, and what is the meaning?
So I'm going to share with you the Om Pat mantra. Pat is spelled PHAT, and it was gifted to me from my teacher, Sally Kempton. And it's a thunderbolt mantra that is to it's to cut through Maya and destroy negativity. And Pat is kind of a way, the way she described it to me, it would be like if you had a guru who might take a stick to you in meditation, be like, pat, a way to create a psychic cut in a train of thought in order to get into the space or the field behind it. So the way that we use it is, I think how I use it and how she introduced it might have kind of evolved over the 20 years that she's given it to me. But we would use it to transmute a certain thought, belief, or premise. And I continue to use it like that, but to also excavate, I find it really useful in working with parts work, which is something I use with internal family systems, because we tend to have in the grooves of our inner mind, let's say, like a neuron or a cluster of neurons that think together and track together, is a very deep groove in the brain. And so all of the practices that we do through yoga, breath work, mantra, movement, they're all transmutational practices. But this particular mantra has just a very concise, fiery way to stop a train of thought that we might be on. So we might say a thought that is continuously thought is a belief. And a belief that is continuously believed becomes who we are. And so this is to kind of psychically short circuit a pattern or a belief and to activate awakening. So the way the mantra goes is Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat. And then we say Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. And swaha means I offer this, or so be it. It's what you would traditionally chant as you were making offerings to an Agnihotra or to a fire ceremony. And I like to also use my hands to gesticulate the giving it away part. So it gives kind of a physicalization to the activating part.
Yeah, especially in this context, it is a very nice image that I personally like to imagine, that I can throw these thoughts into the fire, which has also the transformative energy.
Yeah, that's a big premise of Tantra, is that the outer ritual becomes an internal ritual. And so we're carrying with us the fire, the water, the air, the ether and also the alchemy. We are source, and so having, it's fun and amazing to have an external fire and actually throw things in, but it's more portable to take your fire with you and your transmutational capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that is something that I also really learned from you, or what really landed with me, to not give the energy away. Like, these thoughts can hold a lot of power, right? Or yeah, make us hold back power, and to use this energy for something instead of having it locked inside. So from a tantric perspective, could you explain this kind of practice a little bit more?
So I mean, what you're talking about is Maya. Maya means illusion, and we could, so Tantra holds the premise that we're born absolutely full, absolutely with all power, all possibility, all knowledge available to us, and the confusing thing is that we've contracted ourselves from the fullness of consciousness into a singularity. And on top of that, we've inherited cultures, beliefs, premises that are kind of taken on or in, sort of grooved into, we could say, our neural patterns, our physical patterns, our beliefs. And they're true, not true. They're only as true as much as we bind to them. So if I hold the belief that I'm not worthy, let's say, to do anything, to I'm just fundamentally underneath who you see is a feeling of unworthiness, then according to Tantra, that is the illusion. There's nothing inherently within this body mind, which is part of the continuous never not here field. There's nothing inherently that's not worthy in it. It's a presumed assumption that came either from myself or was put upon me or was my interpretation of what other people perceived. But our job in the yoga, especially the tantric world, is to know our fullness, our worthiness, our wholeness, our capacity, our wisdom, our love. That is the, and just to say that Tantra is coming, standing on already 2,500 years. So we're talking something about 3 to 5,000 years old at least. So it's not just one person's declaration, it's many. Many, 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 many humans' sensation when they arise from the meditative space or the awake space. And it's something that we can all feel. So, what Tantra wants to illuminate is we could call that energy of wholeness, of fullness, of clarity, the truth, or the self with a capital S, the Atman. And we could call the individual contracted thoughts that we tend to bind to, we could call it Maya or the contracted individual self. And we're trying to make these two match so that this individual self, like a drop of water from the ocean, reflects the qualities of the ocean. Or, as a drop of consciousness from the universe reflects the universe. So, practice is about clarifying and, in some ways, transmuting the bound, coiled, perceived sense of difference or lack. And using that to as the energy that opens up the field. can only transmute it. So the energy can be dense and contracted, or it can be open and flowing. And we will be both. We will do both, right? We will expand and contract. We're constantly pulsing, but we have means to lean into our contractions in order to create expansion again.
Yeah, what you just said, and what I also like so much about Tantra is that even the most contracted thought or belief can bring us back to the consciousness awareness of non-separation, or like being part of the field.
Yeah, so we say, right, in the second Shiva Sutra, Jnanam Bandha, knowledge is bondage. And what the commentary from Lakshmanju will say is we can bind to limited knowledge. I could bind to the idea that I'm not good enough, that I'm a woman, that I'm old, that I'm whatever, fill in the blanks. Or I could bind to the unlimited knowledge, the only true knowledge that tantric cares about, which is the field itself and knowing the field. I'm using the word field. We could say Shiva space, Brahma, God. It has many names, none of which are the experience. So any contracted thought is basically tinder you could throw to the fire of transmutation. Yeah.
Yeah. You said it also in another way on your website, what I really liked. When we heal ourselves, we become a healthy cell in a universal body. It's actually also another way of saying it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, anyone can imagine a toxic person that they know, whether they're a family member or a politician. One person's what yoga would call ignorance of self. So one person's contraction from their wholeness, their fullness, their unity creates a lot of destructive behavior. So if we have a destructive member of the family, it would be like having an infected organ that affects the whole. And so it's from a yogic perspective, it's a radical act to achieve your wholeness and your fullness. And if everyone did that, you could imagine what kind of collective consciousness we would walk inside of. As opposed to people holding into their contractions of difference, otherness, trauma, and not healing it, then it continues to float forward, but more negative behavior. We would say negative, yoga would say karma filled, right? The more cause and effect behavior. So it is a radical act. I've tried to make this point to social activists before that it is actually a radical social act to work on this one. You have a lot of people who want to help other people, but they haven't worked on themselves. And my argument is start here, start with this, and then give to others. Because then you're not working from a place of, let's say, competition, jealousy, a sense of lack that needs to be filled, all of the pitfalls that the yoga tradition teaches us about.
Yeah, and actually, we can also see that when we do the work on ourselves, it doesn't end with ourselves. It ripples out. And so, this is actually just another way of realizing that we are not separate.
Yeah. Once you have some amount of clarity, you wish to be interfacing with clarity, those around you, right?
Let's come back to the mantra. And I would like to know if there is a situation that you can think of where this mantra practice really shifted something for you that you would share with us?
Oh, so many things. I used it so many times over the last 20 years. I mean, I think practical situations, like I've definitely, let's say most people could probably relate to the idea of a breakup. And I would say at the beginning of learning these mantras, I was going through quite an intense breakup. And the feelings that a breakup might elicit, like kind of core belief feelings, like maybe I'll never find love again, or feelings of abandonment, whatever the core feelings are. So I would use it for those, which lead in and of themselves to deeper core beliefs. So as the way I use it is I might start with something like my feeling of wanting to let go of the relationship, or to see what is the most relevant belief underneath that. Maybe the first one that arises is I'm not good enough. And then I would take that one and transmute it. And when it feels like there's no charge, then I might go to another one and another one until, I mean, that's the. I think the really relevant thing in any transmutational practice is continuing with it until you feel like there's no charge. So I might use it. I mean, I've used it in political situations that are very triggering, or business situations that feel triggering. Things that, if I don't do something to alchemize the energy, it's sort of sitting inside of me in a way that feels not good, and I don't want to take it on. And even more, I like to combine it with movement, like as you've probably experienced in the trainings, because it tends to kindle the fire, and the fire has a sequence. So I could use the mantra as a doorway into meditation. Or I could use the mantra as a doorway into movement or a combination thereof. And it's something that, if I'm really working with something, I mean, I like to use all of these things in combination. Like if I'm working with somebody on internal family systems and parts, there's often beliefs that parts of our body hold. Like some of the things that I've mentioned that very specifically emerge again and again and again. So that's another way to find the space that remains when we remove the belief or the thought.
Yeah, I think for everyone listening to have a better idea of how this practice could be like, would you guide us through it?
Sure. So let's start by, if you scan your body mind at the moment and feel a situation that has some amount of charge. Well, maybe not the most charge, not the biggest thing in your life currently, but it could be something that perhaps gives a little bit of grip in your mind or in your brain or your heart or your gut. It could be belief around yourself, another person, something that was said to you. It could even be a situation that you don't wish to hold on to the feeling of that situation. And then, when you've landed on something, see really clearly the either yourself or that word phrase, that person, place, or thing, or belief. And then I like to kindle the visual of a fire inside of a cauldron or inside of a fire pit in my belly. And your body's allowed to move, as this could be quite activating. And so what we'll do is we'll start with it for a few minutes, and then I'll check in and see how we're feeling. Okay, but remembering that the idea is not to hold on to it, that you can use your hands with the swaha part to give it away. So just a reminder, the words are Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Pat is P-H-A-T, so it's Pat. It's very active. Om Pat, Om Pat. Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. And the Swaha is the giving it away to the fire. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat. Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Just pausing for a moment. Perceiving the energy, the space. Perhaps the chemical processes of things being in transmutation. And so we'll continue with this for a bit longer. Do you have any questions or clarifications before we go for a longer session?
Do you have any advice for people how to check in with themselves if the thought or situation still has charge?
All we have to do to see if it still has charge is if I bring back up the image of the person or place or thing, and I scan my body. My body's very kinesthetically responsive, and I've also learned to listen to the cues. So, one thing our brain can do is say, I'm fine, it's fine. But if you feel deeper than that, When I really feel charged, especially around something activating, it's gonna feel like it feels like either like a flip in my stomach, like something isn't settled, or a grip in my heart. And that's some version of that, perhaps a tension in the body. A good way to think of it is, when you're like a 8-year-old kid, 7-year-old kids can be really annoying. Like, if you're 10, ones that are just slightly younger. But if you are 30 and you're looking at a 10-year-old kid misbehaving, most likely it's not going to have the same trigger to you. Like, you have enough space and distance, so it's not so activating. And that's kind of a nice visual, I think, for thinking of something that we have enough hindsight with. Let's say maybe a relationship that you broke up with many, many, many years ago. Possibly it's lost any charge, but you could remember when you were right out of it, how intense it was. So we're learning to attend to how the thoughts or memories or beliefs activate our system, and when is it authentically clear? And it might take many sessions, right? Especially if we're working with something that's bigger, if we're working with a deeper belief, but to start to feel the difference of the charge and when perhaps it sequences. And that's a big word I want us to take away, that things have a sequence, emotions have a sequence. And quite often we don't allow them to sequence, and so they get trapped, right? And what I've met with a lot of yogis is that we can kind of bypass sequencing an emotion, especially a deep emotion like rage or grief, and go into a thought like, it's okay, I'm fine. But that's not really sequenced, right? And then it will come out another way.
Yeah, just for everyone to make it clear, could you give an example of the sequence of rage?
Sure. For me, I can only speak from my experience because I think everybody's experience of rage is different. But there's a rise of heat, there's a rise of fire. And I can feel sometimes if it's really intense rage, there might be a moment where I don't feel like I have access to more than just the feeling of rage. It wants to be expressed in some way. But we also have discernment. So when I allow rage to sequence, which usually for me involves some form of either writing it out, usually that's one step, and then I need to move it either by walking or running or dancing or punching a pillow. It needs to have something. And then there will be a moment where it might still be there in echoes, but it's been contextualized in a broader sense. And especially I know it's sequenced when I can start to see perhaps the other side, another point of view, or why something, someone may have acted in this way, right? I can direct a little bit of compassion towards it, but it's authentic, or towards myself. When it's not sequenced is when I don't give it a chance to feel its feelings, and then I go on to the next thing, and it's percolating, and then might come out in my dreams or in a sideways comment to another person, or it gets redirected into something else, which isn't authentic sequencing. That's just suppression and then leaking. Right? So we can feel like when we have tears, right? If we allow ourselves to cry, there's a moment when crying has resolved itself. Or if you're laughing organically, there's a moment where the laughter sort of subsides. And the same is true with every emotion, if we allow it to be in motion. But most of us have learned from a really young age how to not sequence emotions, especially the harder ones like rage or fear or sadness. So that's part of what we're learning. I mean, Tantra is not afraid of emotions, but it looks at them as doorways to source. Right? There are pulsations that emanate out of source. We can follow the pulsation back to source. So in depending on how long you have to do this mantra, it may sometimes if I want to do like a milder version, I might do it when I'm driving from one place to another, just to get rid of whatever was the past interaction. If I'm really going for it could last as long as you wanted to. It could last half an hour, it could last an hour, but it's in, and it may not, I don't think it will fully transmute the feeling, but you can start to gauge when it feels like, and it's, I think, a really skillful thing to do, when something has subsided to the point where you feel you've got enough self available to you. Right? Enough clarity, enough groundedness, enough patience and compassion authentically to be able to skillfully move with what is there that wants to be seen.
Yeah, and I think that is like the most important for that moment, right? That you can at least transmute part of the energy. That's also my experience. And that allows you to have choice again in the way you move on with whatever.
And it's also telling you something important. Like if you experience rage, when you're in a more sequenced aspect of that, you can really look at what triggered me. And that's an important aspect of knowing yourself, right? If let's say it's a relationship, if the relationship is creating rage, which is perhaps a symbol that your boundaries have been violated, it might mean that you need to take action, right? And so it's not to say that sequencing means don't take action. It means that you're able to see what is the emotion telling you, what is the action that wants to be taken, what is the skillful action. And that's always the one that will help the organism of you, right, in the highest sense.
Yeah.
So important to listen to our emotions.
Exactly. Yeah, the listening, which is always part of mantra practice. I used to say, like, listening to the silence after the sound, and it's also listening to the energy vibration that remains after the practice, or that is continuously changing and transmuting.
Yeah, and what is the action of, especially with mantra, what is the word sounds, the phonemes, what does it create? What is the vibratory pulse? Like pat is a very consonant driven, right? And articulate, like pat. You know, it sounds like cut or hit, punch. It has that quality to it. And swaha has a more of a like letting it go, anything that's like ha, sort of up and out, giving it away. It has the aha, it's self-reflective. And swa is like one's own. So it's like you've given it away. Yeah. It's nice to replace a vibration with a different vibration. And that's what mantra does as a technology. So, are you up for, should we do it for a longer period of time?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So you might work with the same image that you were working on. You might find that whatever you start with, if other things arise in that moment, I think it's fine to throw them in, like we're throwing offerings into the fire. So if you start with one situation, and underlying that are other beliefs or thoughts, throw them into the fire. And in a sense, you're cutting that psychic thread, you're cutting that psychic belief and giving it into the fire of transmutation. And as you were doing, I want to also say to the listeners, like you were walking around and using that as part of the activation. And I really think this is a mantra that goes well with movement. So if you feel the activation wants you to stand up and walk around and use your hands to swaha, that is also invited.
Yeah, for me it's really helpful.
Yeah. So just going back, I put this. I mean, to me, this activation process is in my belly. It is behind my navel, all the way up to the diaphragm and all the way down to the pelvis. So it's that whole abdominal area for me. For you, it might be just behind the navel or solar plexus. And conjuring up that thought or belief or situation that you wish to interrupt, that you wish to transmute. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat, Om Pat, Swaha, Swaha, Swaha. Om Pat, Om Pat. Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Two more. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Om Pat Om Pat Om Pat Swaha Swaha Swaha. Just allowing your body to settle into the frequency vibration. The space that remains. and see if you can taste the flavor of space to the extent that there is space. Even if there is a residue of charge, let the charge know that you could write, you could move, you could continue the mantra later. But to taste along the way the sensation of transmutation, the sensation of alchemy.
Thank you. I hope everyone who listened really participated and can now feel a difference. I can definitely feel a difference, and I like how it mirrors what we talked about before from the tantric philosophy, how energy in a contracted form can be transmuted to energy in a more spacious form. And yeah, I think also this practice helps of becoming more aware how this is happening all the time and giving us more capacity to participate also.
I mean, we're broadcasting creatures, so whether or not our anger is expressed, we still can feel people's anger. Or their sadness, or their, I mean, and the more sensitive we become, the more cues we're picking up. And let's say in extreme cases, you can see, I can see my dog avoid certain people and goes towards certain people without knowing anything based on energy, smell. You see the same with children. And I would argue all adults are the same. So our repressed energies are still expressing all the time. So when we clear and transmute, even if it's a little bit, it will start to shift our experience because not just our feeling inside, but who comes to us outside or what permissions they feel, what safety they feel, what connection they feel will be determined by that.
Yeah.
And I would just encourage if people didn't feel comfortable to do the practice in listening through this first time, maybe go back and play the mantra and see if they can feel a sense of space and safety. It helps. I like to chant this one particularly loud.
Yeah.
Helps with the explosivity of it.
Yes. Yeah. I hope that everyone listening to the podcast is already on the way of using their voice more. But yeah, it's definitely also a journey of allowing yourself to be loud. I remember for me just a few years ago that feeling rage for the first time when I allowed myself to scream in my apartment and yeah, scream like a lion. And now when I feel rage, it comes really naturally, like the sequencing of the emotion, and it's like a repatterning also in this way.
Kids love to scream. I mean, it's just so funny when you go by any playground, you just hear like all the time, all day long, and they never lose their voices because it's just not blocked. And so it's a curious thing how we've blocked our voice. And it's to me, the voice is such an indication of what's going on inside, right? Because that's our most obvious doorway from inside to outside,
Totally,
the
yes.
permission to move, the permission for something to move.
Yeah, it's interesting for me when I edit the episodes, even just within the short amount of time, I always notice how my voice or our voices change throughout the conversation,
Yeah,
depending on
sure.
what we're talking about. And yeah.
So when we're connected, our voice has a lot more permission and a lot more range to move. And when we are stifling something or cutting it off, you'll hear that in the vocal quality.
I really don't want to end the conversation, but I guess it's time. So I have one last question for you before we close that I also ask all of my guests. What is one word that our world needs the most right now?
Liberation. I think we are watching ourselves being in such new and really clever, insidious ways, boxed into different boxes that seem like they're not boxes. And I have in the foreground of my mind the aim of the tantrikas, which was moksha or freedom. And I'm struck both in myself and in other people how many things cage us in. And I don't believe that is what the human experience is meant to be. So that start with yourself and then others.
Yeah, I love that. And that's also what I think you do a lot with your work.
Is the primary goal.
Yes. So, would you like to share with everyone listening what upcoming offerings you have, how people can study with you or practice with you?
Yeah, at the moment, the best way to study with me is in person because I'm really leaning into that. And this 25, 26, I've kind of doubled down on containers. I call them trainings, but that doesn't mean you have to be a teacher. I have a 200 hour, and these are all in Bali in October, as well as a 300 hour in January, February, another 300 hour in May and June, all in Bali, all at the Yoga Barn. And all of those are listed on my website, which is embodiedflow.com. And we will have also a 100 hour somatic kundalini immersion, the dates sometime in April. But the best thing is to look at the website and see. And if somebody last minute wants to come, I have a retreat in August in Greece, 24th to 31st of August.
Yes, I highly recommend all of it.
Come to everything.
Tara, thank you so much for your
You
time and for everything that you share.
too.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode and would like to support the podcast, please subscribe and leave me a positive review. See you soon for the next episode, Johanna.